Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in. It's beautiful Brooklyn. Long as I live here, believe I'm gonna fly.
Know where you're going, but don't know how to get there? You found the rabbit hole, Alex. For free bars, apartment hunting, and sending out your demo, he's here to make sure you don't break the bank. Welcome to the Starving Artist Podcast with your host, Johnny Santa.
All right, welcome to the 9th podcast. This is Johnny Sanford. This is the Starving Artist Guide podcast, coming out from Brooklyn, New York, making things happen. We got a great show for you today. My guest is a graphic designer, Miss Laura Warwick, and she'll be helping us figure out how to make it as a graphic designer in New York City. Hopefully she has some answers for you guys out there who might want to do the same thing. But first, we've got some news to bring up. Just was checking out CNN.com, and at one of the articles is called "Ticket Prices Affect Bands in a Tough Economy." And this basically goes into the whole Live Nation Ticketmaster controversy. Now, in early February, Ticketmaster and Live Nation decided to merge into a single company, a behemoth of a ticketing company. And they call themselves Live Nation Entertainment. However, the Justice Department has been investigating whether the merger is actually not a monopoly. However, they haven't come to a consensus just yet. Just going into an article on Wired.com. They go into how Ticketmaster has tried to do this before. One interesting thing that they say is, from an antitrust perspective, it's going to get extensive and thorough investigation by one of two antitrust agencies, maybe more likely the Justice Department than the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, because the Justice Department did a monopoly investigation of the Ticketmaster in the 90s. So hopefully we can take music back. Now, the article on CNN goes into how a band called Trampled by Turtles is getting kind of around this by using local firms, one called Ticket Alternative. And that keeps the prices down to around $15 instead of having to, you know, get a $25 ticket. However, the Ticketmaster is, I mean, the one thing they do have is a breadth. It's a monopoly, but you can get tickets from pretty much for any concert anywhere from Ticketmaster, basically. Now, the article on CNN claims that the Ticketmaster Live Nation merger has drawn criticism. The Justice Department launched an investigation of the proposed merger in February, which came just days after the protest by fans and lawmakers over Ticketmaster's pricing arrangements for a Bruce Springsteen show. Springsteen himself accused Ticketmaster of, in effect, scalping the tickets. Ticketmaster CEO Irving Azoff apologized to Springsteen after that incident. Now, he had a similar incident again, where fans were told that the tickets were unavailable when they really were. That was very recent, I think, within the last couple days. So Springsteen is probably just going to start his own ticketing company. I wouldn't be surprised. He has enough money. Funny thing about Springsteen, he used to come into the bookstore that I worked at every week, every Sunday, just to browse the music section. And everyone pretty much left him alone. But it was kind of cool, just having the boss in the house. Now, let's listen to the band Trampled by Turtles, who that CNN article was about. That was Trampled by Turtles, Empire. You heard it first here. You can check out their MySpace, myspace.com/trampledbyturtles. Now, last week I watched a film, as it were, called Before the Music Dies. And I put a link up on starvingartistsguide.com because it was such a powerful movie that I felt like anyone who has a stake in the future of music should, I seriously recommend taking a listen to that. Now you can get it's linked to hulu.com, which is free. All you have to do, and it's legal, all you have to do is watch a couple commercials in between, like every 20 minutes. They're 30-second commercials, so, you know, it's worth it. Changing topics in the slightest of sense, this is a piece by an editor for the Metro in the opinion section by Mr. Neil DeMause. And I'm particularly interested. He puts out good opinion columns every once in a while for Metro. And this one had to do with the Church of Stop Shopping, which is featured in the movie What Would Jesus Buy? Now, the reverend is this kind of like bleach blonde haired crazy man who just wants everyone to stop shopping. But, I mean, the point isn't to stop shopping. It's to stop shopping to the point of ecological collapse. And to be using thrift stores and flea markets and Craigslist and all those things in tandem with getting new things. Because, I mean, like, this weekend I went out, one of my friends was in town, and, you know, I went out and bought a new sweatshirt because I needed a sweatshirt, and I finally have some money in my bank account, so I said, screw it, I'm going to get a sweatshirt. And it was on sale, so it was $30. But, I mean, I had, like, this guilt complex kind of driven into me since I've been living on such cheap, so cheaply lately. But, you know, it's okay to spend money as long as you're doing it responsibly. I guess that's the main point. It's not like I went out and put it on a credit card. I had the money, I bought it. End of story. But this article in the Metro, to get back to that point, is based on the fact that Reverend Billy has changed the name of his church. So let me just read that article. It's called Preaching the Shop Local Gospel. It's not an easy time to be an American consumer. At every turn, we're told that our free spending ways have brought us to the brink of economic disaster. And now that we're again hiding money under our mattresses, what's the solution? As Uncle Sam says on the cover of last week's Newsweek, I want you to start spending. Fortunately, the Reverend Billy has a way out. The performance artist, activist, and green mayoral candidate has converted his Church of Stop Shopping to the Church of Life After Shopping to help us in these troubled times. When the smoke from the battle clears, turns out we have the next step to take. And that is realizing that we are the stimulus. And what we spend means a lot right now, Billy said. For the Reverend, it's about having faith in startups and local stores that can fill the gap as chain stores file Chapter 11. We have more single household farms than we had 12 months ago, and the first time in 50 years this is true. And that feeling is a greatly growing green market. There's a record number of small companies starting up every week. People are making livings right now in the new swap economy and thrift economies that didn't exist a few years ago. Now, as far as Chapter 11 goes, it's true. I mean, I live in a fairly wealthy part of town in Brooklyn. And the main street, we are losing, like, these big-name companies every day. I mean, last week it was Circuit City, and I did end up getting a new computer because my computer killed itself. The Virgin Megastore in Times Square is moving out. Same with the Union Square eventually. I think they said it's that one's going to be going in November. But the one in Times Square has 4 days left. By the time this podcast airs, it will already be dead. Which is kind of sad, but kind of good too. Maybe we can, instead of having a giant Virgin Megastore, why don't we have 50 tiny record stores where mom and pops are making the money, not, you know, Richard Branson to fund his private island. as cool as that life is, you know, hundreds of other families could survive on that income. Anyways, not to be a downer. We're going to get to the interview in about 10 minutes. Going to go to a song break. And before we get to the song break, I'm just going to go over one more thing that's on my mind. And that is about web censorship. It's kind of a big topic. But pretty recently, Australia has added some websites that they literally will not allow you to go onto if you are an Australian citizen. Now, when I think of Australia, I don't think of somewhere like communist China. I think of a place that's fairly similar to the United States. And this is another Metro article. And, you know, I love the Metro because they're kind of subversive and everyone's getting it. And if you have your eyes open, you can kind of see these things taking shape. Now, see if I can find it. Australia blocks website with leaked info. Now, this is from the weekend edition of the Metro. But I'm just going to go over the gist of it. WikiLeaks, which published Thailand's and Denmark's secret web censorship lists late last year, has now been added to a secret list of its own in Australia after the page was submitted to the Australian Communications and Media Authority list of prohibited online content. Publications of Australia's secret list is punishable with fines up to $11,000. WikiLeaks, which is based on the Wikipedia model of anonymous user contributors, alleges that secret censorship systems established under the guise of preventing the spread of pornographic materials can quickly grow to become a menace when government seeks to repress political information. Now, this means that Denmark has a web censorship list. This means that, well, I know we have a web censorship list. It's for anything that's infringed upon. Any infringed material immediately gets taken down in the United States. So Australia, Denmark, Thailand, there's actually a list of it on, WikiLeaks. Go to WikiLeaks.com while you still can and find out what's being censored. Now, the article continues that all of these websites have one thing in common, and it's not really pornographic material. It's of the 1,203 sites censored this year, all have the internally noted reason of criticizing the royal family. Ain't that a bitch? Interesting stuff. So, again, it boils down to the elite versus the masses. Now, on the last podcast, I had artist Brian Whiteley. And he also has a band, and I was going to put his band on the last podcast, but I completely forgot. It's kind of a rush to get that out there on Sunday. So I'm going to play one of his songs from his band, The Rich Get Richer. These guys are playing out April 11th at Otto's Shrunken Head in Manhattan and the R Bar in May, on May 7th. Check it out only on the Starving Artist Guide. We'll be back with the interview with Laura Warwick, graphic designer, and... All right, see you on the other side.
let's get back to business as usual. For the wait outside becomes too long for you and me. What you want is
Got It Made by The Rich Get Richer. Thank you again to Brian Whiteley for letting me use that song. And before I do that, though, I'm going to do a little begging here. Not begging, but you know, I've been doing this for quite some time, this podcast, for like the last 2 months. And it's a lot of work. So if you want to go buy my EP, it's $5.99 from iTunes. Just look up Permutations, Johnny Sanford. Or you can buy the Big Nothing album. That features Sean Keneally for half the songs. He gets half the profit. So I'm still only getting about $5-6 here. Or you can just donate to the Starving Artist Guide by going to the website, starvingartistguide.com, and just going to the bottom, there's a donate button, and that will, I don't know, it'll help me get new equipment, help me kind of build this thing, give me money for publicity, make sure that other starving artists can get the chance to listen to this so that it actually helps them, because I'm doing all this out of my own pocket. Any kind of publicity, any kind of stuff like that. I don't know. It'd be nice if you guys showed me that you are listening. $1, $2. Just donate. It's straight to my bank account. It's going to go straight into this. So just go to starvingartistguide.com. There are links to the albums. You can buy an album, like a physical copy, from CD Baby, yada, yada, yada. I'm not a beggar. I'm a chooser. So I'm going to choose for you to... I'm going to choose for you guys to donate. All right. This is my interview with Laura Warwick. She is in-house, in studio, going to give you guys the goods on how to be a graphic designer, where she came from, how she got here, and where she's going. Check it out. With Laura Warwick, graphic designer extraordinaire. Do not do that.
What?
Now I have to edit. It's going to take me 15 minutes to find that. That just little, your chair move.
Sorry.
It's okay.
You can leave it in.
Yeah, I probably will. As far as just, like, time goes, I'm running late on this one.
Whatever.
I'm recording the day before I'm getting this fucker out there, so. And my mom hates it when I swear, so she says, don't swear. Don't swear on your
podcast. Oh, I'm going to swear.
Oh, boy. All right, keep it clean.
Oh, I'm not really capable of
that. My relatives listen to this show.
Do they really?
All right. Let's get into the interview.
Let's go.
Well, actually, we can just, we could probably edit.
Shoot
I could
shit.
Probably just edit this whole mother effer out. So, Laura.
Johnny.
Graphic designer extraordinaire.
That's
how I built you up.
Don't do it.
You can find her work at laurawarwick.com. WORRICK.
Yep.
Not war, as in going to.
Or not war, Warwick, like Warwick, Rhode Island.
So, the first hard-hitting question is, could you please go over who you are and where you come from?
Who I am? What do
in
you...
under 5 seconds.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Well, I grew up in Massachusetts, a small town outside of Boston, Cowtown.
It was called Cowtown?
It was called Cowtown, yeah.
Oh my god, that's more bum stick than
Cowtown,
mine.
Cowtown, Massachusetts. So there were a lot of cows, and I went to school in Rhode Island at Rhode Island School of Design, which is in Providence. I was an illustration major, but I was always interested in design, so, you know, I, as much as I loved, you know, drawing and painting and all that stuff, I still, you know, focus some of my stuff on design, as well as, like, classical illustration, like doing children's books.
Mm-hmm. You said that you worked at a publishing house.
I did. I had interned with some, like, publishing-related companies while I was in school, and then March of my senior year at RISD, I was hired as a full-time intern for Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, which is...
Is that the correct way? I always... Houghton.
No, it's Houghton.
Houghton Mifflin.
Houghton.
I learned something
new. Hoedown Muffin, we used to call it.
Houghton Mifflin.
Houghton Mifflin, sure.
Houghton?
Houghton.
Houghton Mifflin. Interesting. And you designed a number of children's books.
Sort of. Well, so I started out as the intern and eventually became a design assistant, essentially. And, yeah, I was working on a number of different titles. You know, I worked on everything.
You want to plug those? Will you get a check for those? Like a residual check?
No, like royalties?
That'd be awesome.
No. I was a designer. I wasn't the illustrator or the author. That's sort of a different entity that's dealt with under, like, the editor. My position was working... What people don't realize is that when a book is done, you know, it goes... The story idea and the illustrations, you know, go through the editor. The editor picks up those people... But it has to be made. It has to be put together. You know, someone has to choose the typefaces. Someone has to choose the layout and the sizing. And it's sort of tedious work to a degree. But there's also a lot of room for creativity, especially when you're doing covers, which I wasn't doing very many covers. Because we had acquired Harcourt, I was getting to redesign a lot of Harcourt's titles.
New issues.
Yeah, like they were going from hardcover to paperback, so I would redesign like the back covers and the spine. But yeah, so that's, you know, basically what my job covered was. I mean, not obviously I was doing, because I was like the low man on the totem pole, I was, you know, doing all sorts of other things as well. But basically working in the design department at a publisher means that you're to a degree, you're the middleman. You know, you're taking the words and the art and you're putting it together in a cohesive form and making it marketable.
Now, for that, we can find some of your designs on your website, right?
Yeah. One of my biggest project while I was at Houghton would be the Gossy and Friends board book box set.
Box set?
Box set, yes.
That's cool.
It was four books. Can't even remember. It's pretty sad. Four board books, which are the little square books that, like, infants chew on. Yeah, it was four of those. So the books were pretty much designed, but I got to do the whole box and figure out the artwork. And
that's very
so it was
cool.
really cool. You know, so there's some, despite the fact that it's like on the computer, there is some like three dimensional work involved, which
that's
is cool,
cool
to have that variety. But yeah, so that's.
So let's get into that. Did you start as an intern or?
Yeah. Yep.
So you start as an intern, you just send them your stuff.
You send
them a resume?
No, that's how it was different. I worked for an artist agent for about a year and a half while I was at RISD. That was one of my internships. And she, the woman who ran the artist agency was my teacher, was my one of my professors at RISD. And she let me intern with her one winter session, and then I ended up working with her during the summer as well into the fall. But what she did was she was a representative of the artist. So people who wanted to illustrate children's books would come to her, and if she felt their work was strong enough and marketable, she would pick you up. So, in other words, she was...
So it's a connection.
Yeah, she's your agent. Like actors have agents, mm-hmm. like illustrators
cool.
have agents. Yeah, it was a really interesting job. So that was less design-related, but,
you
know,
that
was...
you were still at school, correct?
Yeah, yep.
Get started early if you're going to school. To
yeah,
school
no,
as an artist.
Definitely. Like,
you're
that's
a young gun.
So much a part of the design community is being a part of that community as young as possible,
mm-hmm.
Making those connections, no matter how small. I mean, you'd be surprised. And people are really willing to help you.
It's a fairly small community.
Yeah, it is.
People know each other.
Yeah, and especially, you know, being at RISD, people really look out for you, and so people are always hiring.
Kind of like
other
essentially RISD. the Ivy Leagues of graphic design or art in general, right?
Sure, yeah. It's I think it's seen that way to people who know the school. And there's obviously a lot of other great art schools out there too, but RISD is definitely you know one of the good ones. But yeah, you know, use whatever connections you have and don't be afraid to use them.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah.
So you said you were in Boston. What persuaded you, what was the factor that brought you to New York City?
Well, I was working in Boston. I was at Houghton. I was working as a freelancer. So, I mean, luckily for me, since I only graduated this past May and the way insurance works in Massachusetts, I'm covered under my parents' insurance until I'm like 25. But I knew that, you know, I wasn't really getting paid enough and I wasn't really happy with the job anymore. I mean, it didn't offer enough creativity and I wanted to be self-sufficient. You know, I wanted to have my own health insurance and have my own place and, you know, I had been home long enough. So
I know that feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought that I would be that person, but it sort of worked out that way that my job didn't offer me enough security. I knew that it was probably only going to be temporary because the company is not doing well.
But it also gave you some more connections, which allowed you to come here and start working for Oshkosh B'gosh, correct?
Well, the Oshkosh wasn't totally related to Houghton, but a few of the other things I've done while I've been here have been. So, you know, I finally was looking at jobs in New York, and one of the hardest things about looking for jobs in New York is that if you don't live in New York, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get hired.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And especially in this economy, people don't want to take a risk on you moving your whole life down to New York. They want to make sure that you're already here and you're ready to start and you can come in whenever.
The little zip code.
Yeah, so for a while, when I wasn't actually in New York, I was using my friend's address on my resume, so people assumed I lived in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely don't
there you go.
Don't hesitate to use that. No, I've had a lot of people tell me that it was a really good idea, and it definitely helps. But so I've been looking for a while. I'd been looking from January, or from rather September until November, when I finally kind of like hit a point where I knew that living in Boston, looking for a job in New York just wasn't going to happen. I mean, and there wasn't anything in Boston that I was interested in doing. You know, the job field was kind of small, and I was ready for something new. So that's why I was looking in New York originally. And plus, there are more jobs, too. I mean, there's, you know, there isn't as much in Boston. I mean, there's plenty of jobs in New York to be had. So,
so for those of you who are who might be afraid that there's not enough security to, like, push towards New York City.
Yeah.
This is Laura Warwick.
You'll find it. I moved. So I moved.
Freelance turned.
Full time.
9 to 5 or no. Well, like.
Well, like nine to tenners. Tenners. 9 to 8, 9. Yeah. So, yeah. So in November, I sort of, you know, after being kind of pushed by a few of my coworkers who had been in New York and told me how wonderful it had been.
It's a big lease.
Yeah. They said, you know what? Like, you just need to, like, save up and move to New York. You know, go balls to the walls. Like,
how
don't
much
worry
did you save up? If you don't mind me asking,
it's fine.
For other people,
I had, I want to say like 6 or 7 thousand saved up. You know, I started looking on Craigslist for apartments. You know, I had my price range because, like, I didn't know how long I was going to be unemployed mm-hmm. and how long that money was going to last. So my price range was like between 600 and 800.
Can I just say, I came down with 2G because I'm a G.
Yeah,
original
whatever.
Gangster.
Whatever.
I am a starving artist through and through. $2,000, blew it all in 1 month. Luckily, by the grace of God, I got a job literally 4 days before I was going to leave.
You were going to go home.
I was going to go home.
Wow.
And then I got the call and I was like, boom, I'm staying.
Yeah, that's
this
awesome.
This city did not defeat me. Yeah. But sometimes you have to, like, push for it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get out there, get your ass on the streets, talking to people, making connections.
Yep, that's what it's
all about.
Taking
any possible route possible.
Yeah. But yeah, so when I moved here, I had been interviewing with my current company that I'm at now, Oshkosh.
Yeah, and you had the freelancing,
yeah,
too.
And I was freelancing. So I had money coming in, but I was interviewing with this place that's in New York now, and I didn't have anything for sure, but I had a lot of things kind of on the burners. You know, I had all kinds of contacts, other publishing houses. I mean, I was interviewing about 3 times a week. And, you know, not at, like, Starbucks. Like, I was interviewing at, you know, like, different publishers and, like, design places and everything. And, you know, it's a really tough economy. And so a lot of people were like, yeah, you're great, but, like, we just can't hire anyone right now. So that was, I mean, it was sort of like a double-edged sword where, yeah, it was
a
great compliment, but, you know, it's still not, it's not making me any money. So...
get ready for rejection. The same with me.
Yeah.
Trying to do anything.
But at the same time...
You face a lot of rejection. You right. have to rise above it.
But rather than seeing it... I mean, I never saw it as rejection. I saw it as like, okay, so they don't want me now. And maybe they don't really want me at all. But it's a connection. And they might know another person who's looking mm-hmm. for somebody.
And one of the things I remember you doing was sending out thank yous. Personalized thank
yeah,
yous.
Yeah, I would
to
hand draw. If you are an artist, it is a joke to send some pre-made thank you note. You have to make your own. I'm sorry. Like, it's just not acceptable. You have the skills.
Speaking of that.
Yes.
What is the difference between graphic design and art? This is a hard question, but I want to hit you with it. Because I don't know personally.
I mean,
I don't know what I would be considered. I don't know. I'm just.
I feel like, I mean, this is my personal perspective on fine art versus design, but I feel like fine art is much more.
Subjective?
I don't know. For lack of a better term, a selfish form of art as an overall umbrella, which I think design falls under. Because when you're doing fine art, unless it's like a commission piece, like.
You're just doing it for yourself.
You're doing it for yourself, and you're hoping that, like, it'll get in a gallery, or it'll get in a show, and, you know, it's about your emotional connection to the medium.
Whereas graphic design... Is for the masses?
Yeah, I mean, most of graphic design is done with the intent to sell something.
It's true.
Whether it's a concept, whether it's a product.
That's a double-edged sword right there.
Yeah.
Because if you don't believe in what you're selling...
It can be difficult, but that's sort of that's the life of a graphic designer. I mean, you're rarely ever... I shouldn't say rarely ever, but most times you're not designing what you want to design because, like, you're designing for someone else, you know? Mm-hmm. And while you may get a client who has a really cool product that you're super excited about, like, there are plenty of times that, like, you're not. And that's, you know, that's not where you need to rely on your excitement about the design to come from. You need to be able to brainstorm something about that product that makes you excited to work on the design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think it's, you know, it's a lot of problem solving too. Like, I think that's another thing that differentiates design from fine art is, you know, figuring out how to best promote the product or, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to sell through your art. And then illustration is sort of its own other thing.
Yeah.
I feel like, too, because that's sort of...
Because you're still doing
conveying
the same thing.
Yeah. It's sort of like... Illustration is sort of like this murky area between design and fine art, I feel like.
So, how has your impression of New York as a city changed since you initially got here? Has it? Are you still finding things to do? Are you still...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kind of mesmerized by it?
I mean, I feel like I frequented New York a lot. Like, as a kid and, like, you know, up until now. So I feel like the city, upon moving here, didn't have that same allure that maybe it does for some people who don't come here as mm-hmm. often. You know, I just have a better grasp of the city. And, you know, I feel more and more like a New Yorker every day, which is sort of fun.
Except your credit card with the Boston.
Oh, whatever. Red Sox. You know what? I don't care. I could move to the fucking moon and I will always be a Red Sox fan. I don't care. I will die a Red Sox fan. Patriots, I'm sorry. My roots are in Boston.
But I know what you're saying in the fact that, you know, people are lured. They're lured here because of a statue in the middle of the water and, like, an Empire State Building. But it's really the people that kind of set this place apart.
Yeah, I mean, I have
diverse...
a blog that, you know...
You want to shoot out your blog?
Sure.
People want it?
Sure, yeah. It's basically writing about my experiences in New York and living with the...
Me.
Well, sure, living with you, which has been awesome. And
cockroaches?
I was talking more about the individual who lives above my bedroom, who, you know, I just love. Yeah, it's laras.blogspot.com. However, it is spelled LAWRAW.
Laura.
Laura. With an S. Laras.blogspot.com.
So, you mentioned you're a freelancer.
Yep.
How does that job differ from holding a traditional job? Is it... It's obviously more flexible. You
yeah.
don't make as much.
Well... You do and you don't. I mean, the thing with...
Would you recommend it to someone who wants to do that kind of thing?
It depends on the person. I mean, it's... Being a freelancer is a lifestyle, I feel like. You know, you don't have the 9-to-5. You can work whenever you want. You can work at 3 in the morning.
Do you
can work at 10 in the morning. Yeah, I still do freelance.
Wow.
You know, which is tough because when you work from 9:30 in the morning and you don't get home until 10:30 at night and then you've got 2 hours of freelance to do, it's a lot. But
you're a workaholic. And I think
well,
that's required.
Well, that's
here.
A product of going to RISD, I feel like. they sort of do that to you. But yeah, I just, you know, I expect a lot from myself and, you know, I'll put in a lot of hours. I'm just used to it. But freelance is a very different beast from working the 9-to-5. Because like I said, you know, you can work any hours, but at the same time, it's not, for some people, it's really stressful. Like, I find it stressful to be just freelancing because it's not a steady paycheck. You don't know where your next job is going to come from, you know, and you're always sort of like pimping yourself out.
Use a pimp.
Yeah, I'm a pimp. And it's true. No. You know, you don't have health insurance, and also, like, the taxes will kill you. You know, when you work for...
Self-employed.
Right. When you work for a company, they take out those taxes. When you're a freelancer, you are responsible for paying quarterly taxes, which is total bitch. And they usually want you to send them about 30% of your income every quarter.
To fight a war in Iraq.
or something, you know, whatever. I don't know to kill puppies or whatever the fuck they do with drown our baby money.
Kittens.
Yeah, something. Skin infants.
Can whatever. You go over some helpful websites for future graphic designers that they might like?
They
love.
Well,
how do they get
in terms of getting jobs or in terms of inspiration?
Because
there's
jobs,
two kinds of different.
And then we'll go with inspiration second.
The site that I, oh God, let's see, there's quite a few. Like right now I just sort of have like a base of people who like I am in contact with that sort of like spread my name. You know what I mean? It's more like by word of mouth that I mm-hmm. get my freelance work. But I also
Is there like a Craigslist for graphic designers?
Well, there is postings on Craigslist looking for.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I mean, if there's one specifically for like
You've
that.
Never needed it.
I've never seen it. I am currently being represented by a company called Creative Circle. They're in New York, and I think they're also in LA. They might be in Boston. They have a couple of locations, but they represent you and they get you work through their contacts. And, you know, they send me emails. Oh, God, I don't know, at least once a day with different things. And I respond to the email saying, yeah, I'd totally be interested in, like, whatever that freelance job is. And then that company who's looking for the freelancer will look through the different people who have responded through Creative Circle, and they'll sort of make their choices there. But I feel like they're a really good agency to get hooked up with when you move to New York because they'll offer you, you know, tons of different options and
mm-hmm.
companies to work for. I can't think of anything else offhand.
It's all right.
But you can post them on the website.
Just give me
I'll give you a list and we can
post now them. Let's wrap it up. One final question. Final advice for someone who's coming to New York City. What should they do?
Be ready to work, man. Like, just be confident and have your shit together and be willing to do anything and sell yourself any way possible. I mean, you need to be your best advocate, you know? Like, you need to be willing to talk to strangers and, you know, have business cards made and don't expect... I mean, I think people are... you know, sort of expect something to fall in their lap. And now, because the economy is so bad and they're saying, oh, there's no jobs, you know, people...
It makes it much harder.
Yeah, it does, but at the same time, like, I think people are using that as an excuse. And I guess, like, don't come here and use that as an excuse if it's hard, because it's not like people at any point were handing out jobs. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
It's not like before the economy collapsed, it was easy to get a job. And I think people are using that as an excuse.
This town is
but
not...
But use that to motivate you.
This town is not full of failures.
No.
Those people go home within the first couple months, and then they just live in their, you know, their town.
And you know what? And be willing to do anything. You know what? If you really want it to work out, like, work at Starbucks, work at a bookstore, like...
Find what
be
you like.
Be a waitress.
And then find the retail version
of
it. Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree.
Exactly. You know, you like children's books, work at, like, a bookstore, you know, like...
In the kids section. Then not only are you going to figure out how the people who are getting published write a book,
mm-hmm.
but you're also going to be memorizing your contemporaries.
Yeah.
You're going to be making connections with other people who are interns. It's
another
all
good resource,
situation.
Too, is find out if there is an alumni group from your... college or university in New York. RISD has one, and they have events like at least once a month, and that's a great way to meet people from your alma mater who are like more likely to try to help you out because you guys went to the same school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They want to help out other alumni and, you know, just make connections any way you can.
Indeed. All right, thank you, Laura, for giving
You're
us your precious time. I'm going to lead this out with The Rake Song by the Decemberists. This is on the South by Southwest mix, available on starvingartist.com, starvingartistguide.com, and it's free. You get 10 downloads via iTunes. So check that out. Just go to the website, The Rake Song. See you on the other side.
The bells rang for our wedding. say a thought, but was easily invested. Burned his body for incurring my wrath. All right, all right, all right. And that's how I came, your humble narrator, to be living so easy and free. I expect that you think
All right, so there it is, folks. This is the conclusion of the 9th Starving Artist podcast. Like I said, that was the Rake song by the Decemberists. You can get that for free via iTunes, via my website, www.starvingartistsguide.com, plural start artists. And, just to like to thank Miss Laura Warwick one more time, because she gave a great interview. Hopefully that has been eye-opening for the graphic designers out there who want to get out here to New York City. Also, you can check out her work at www.laurawarwick.com, W-O-R-R-I-C-K. LauraWarwick.com. She's got some great stuff up there. And you can even send her an email if you love her stuff. And you can probably get her to do some freestyle freelance shit for you guys, if that's what you are into. So, let's end it with Astronomy, Eighth Light by Black Star, who I'm going to see May 1st, I believe. They're coming to Nokia Theater, and I will be there. Check it out. Astronomy, Eighth Light by Black Star. Join us next week for the 10th Starving Artist Guide. Come check us out. And keep on keeping on. It's a shine from very far to where you are. It is commonplace and different, intimate and distant, fresher than an infant. Black, my family thick like that strap molasses. Star on the rise in the eyes of the masses. Black is the color of my true love's hair. Stars are bright shining in hot balls of air. Black like my baby girl stare. Black like the veil that the Muslimina wear. Black like the planet that they fear. Why they scared? Black like the slave ship galley that brought us here. Black like the cheeks that are roadways for tears. That leave black faces well traveled with years. Black like assassin crosshairs. Blacker than my granddaddy armchair. He never really got no time to chill there, cause his life was warfare. See, on the front lines to blacks, it's all there. Black like the perception of who on welfare. Black like faces at the bottom of the well. I've been there before to bring the light and heat it up like Lacosina. Make what I imagine happen, but maybe I'm just a dreamer. I love rocking tracks like John Coltrane, love Naima. Like the student, love the teacher. Like the prophet, love Khadijah. Like I love my baby features. Like the creator, love all creatures. Who are knowledge, truth, and peace seekers. We on point like heat seekers. Targeting the black market, 10 strategists. Run up on them with the heaters. Everybody following with no leaders. Feeling like we killing ourselves, because I know they can't defeat us. It don't stop till we complete this. Keep this fly. There's so much to life when you just stay black and die. Blacker than the nighttime sky, a best star in July. Blacker than the seed in the blackberry pie. Blacker than the middle of my eye. Black like Fela, man cry. Some man want ask who am I. I simply reply that you and I. V-E-R-S-A-L magnetic. Work to respect the angelic. Climb the mountaintop and tell it to the valleys envelop. You're full of big chat, but you're not no me. I'm dark like the side of the moon you don't see. When the moon shine newly, you know who else is a black star? Who? Me. You know who else is a black star? Who? Me. You know who else is a black star? Who? We. And we.
we be shining and shining. When we rhyming and rhyming, we be shining and shining. When we rhyming and rhyming, now everybody hop on the one. The sounds of the two is the third eye vision. Five side dimension, the eighth light is gonna shine bright tonight. It's the third eye vision, five side dimension.
You know the light,
go from the dark.
The other way is ass backwards.
It's absurd.
Make you wanna crow like a blackbird.
That's right.
You living from your first day to your last night. Sometimes you show your ass like
lint on your clothes.
When you froze in the black light,
dead dad.
Before you get your head wrapped,
like Badu.
We see through your voodoo just like E-Rod. You dealing with the black magic.
Try to civilize you,
not walk on by you.
Like Sybil,
lies do get you blacklisted.
It'll
be unlucky for you like a black cat.
A panther.
Revolution is the answer.
That's what we need.
Greed like my people like a cancer.
True indeed. The black people unite. Let's all get down. Now everybody hop on the one. The sounds of the two. It's the third eye vision. Five side dimension. The eighth light is gonna shine bright tonight. Everybody hop on the one. The sounds of the two. It's the third eye vision. Five side dimension. The eighth light is gonna shine bright tonight. It's the third eye vision. Five side dimension. Equaling up to eight lights shine bright.
One right there.